Let's put the user into the center of development and optimization. Let's check what they want to achieve and then come back and optimize and evaluate, do all of the things, but you have to know what they want because like it's very, in real world, in production could happen anything. It's very probability based, right? You cannot like test out all those cases in this like with evaluation tools, but what you can do, you can, if you know what is their intention, what they want to achieve, you can go back and add it to the application. That was kind of the intensive in terms of optimization, making these solutions reliable, aligned with end user expectations, ethics, values, etc.
Hello everyone and welcome to the EVN Disrupt podcast. My name is Najdat Zathurian and I'm the editor of the tech section here at EVN Report. Our guest today is Chinar Movsisyan, the co-founder and CEO of Feedback Intelligence. We spoke about her journey as a founder and pivoting from computer vision to the world of large language models. Their new product, Feedback Intelligence, tells LLM application builders how to build more reliable products by identifying where the LLMs might be generating responses that differ from the expected outcomes and providing actionable insights into how to improve their performance. Thank you for listening. Chinar. Okay. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
So the last time you were on was June 2022. So it's more than 2 years ago.
Yeah.
What have you learned about being a founder in these last 2 years that you didn't know when you came the first time?
Oh, that's a good question. So maybe we can say top three things that I can recall I have learned as a founder. Being a founder is a character. It's not about having a PhD. It's not about having great business skills. It's not about having, I don't know, like very good sense about the problem. Like those are important, but those are not sufficient to be a founder. So it's just a character. Secondly, I would say being a founder, you have to recognize that you know the best about your vision, about the problem, about your customer. You can ask feedback, you can ask advice, you can do these things, but you have to filter what you need at that moment. That's your job. No one will solve it for you. And the third one will be, like for me, doing this thing, like being a founder is all about solving one of the best, like challenging problems that I know better, etc. But doing a startup, it's all about capital. Capital means money. So this is just about money for everyone. So you have to always think about that. So people talk to you for their benefit in terms of like investment or being with you as an advisor, etc. Of course, in this early stage, there are a lot of people who just believe in you as a person. But down the road, you feel that there are a lot of things that are happening just for capital, which is okay. No judgment, nothing here. But you need to think about that as well, which I started doing.
I remember during our first conversation, I asked you about, so you have a background, you have a PhD in machine learning, you're very technical, you were an engineer, etc. And I remember I asked you why sort of set all of that aside and take on a business role as a CEO and a founder of a company. In your answer, you said something like, without money, you can't do anything. And I'm curious, like, was there a time where you romanticized the idea of a startup and the problem solving of it more? And now 2 years down the road, are you much more pragmatic? And this is like,
exactly,
this is a business first and foremost, and you have to solve a real business problem.
Yes.
It's not about the most interesting engineering or scientific problem.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was the reason that maybe we'll start talking about it. That was the reason that we pivoted. It was a hard decision to make. My whole background is in computer vision. I haven't done anything LLMs are think right now, but we had BERT before, but I haven't done that before. And that was a very hard decision to say, okay, right now the problem like exists in this vertical as an LLM problem and we have to switch. And that pivot we should have done before than we did. Like we did
earlier than you should
have. Earlier. Yeah. We did like in February or so, but we could have done that earlier.
So when you first came on, the company was called Manut.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys had, in the very, very early days, you were working with aerial data and annotation and things of that nature. And when you first came on, you guys had just started building out
evaluation,
the model evaluation and observability yes. platform that told people building computer vision models where those models might be faulty.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys had a data engine that suggested novel data samples that can be added to the model's training set in order to improve the performance of the model. And now you guys are more in the large language model space. So tell us how you guys took that technology and mm-hmm. pivoted it into the LLM area.
So as you mentioned, we solved that problem. We had this engine that was able to suggest samples where computer vision model, any computer vision model will be faulty, will fail to recognize or segment. While doing this, we had some customers, everything was pretty good. We were able to build a great solution with great benchmarks and everything. But we saw that this computer vision market, we were selling to robotics. Last year was not a good year for robotics companies, for sure, for venture capital, I mean. These people didn't have money. Like right now, it's not a great market for them either. But yeah, we saw this. We saw that it's very hard to expand it. It's very hard to get more customers. And I remember we were interviewing with YC, and one of the partners, Diana, the feedback was like, this makes sense. The problem makes sense. Like feedback loop from production to engineering, like this product manager thing, these all make sense. But the market is not like how you're going to get your 100 million ARR. What is that theoretical path? That was a fair comment. After that was December last year. We were like, okay, let's try to see if we can onboard 3 customers, whatever size they are, in January, like push it one more time. This is not working. Even though I was like in San Francisco with all these connections and everything. And then we were like, okay, let's see what are the other directions. And I have a couple of VC connections in tier one, and I'm like regularly in touch with them. We were speaking together about like the market opportunity and everything. And mm-hmm. he was like, have you tried to look into like text? And text was like, okay, meaning OCR, mm-hmm. meaning large language models. And we started to explore that direction, and we started to interview a lot of people. And connecting with people was initially like connections, like network, through investors, through advisors. And we got connected with a couple of friendly people. We validated the problem. And then, of course, like friends are not the best validators, but we went out and, okay, let's talk to others, like enterprise level, what they do about this. Like if we sum up the current problem that we are solving in large language models, we can say reinforcement learning from human feedback, like that's the traditional one, but for in the context of large language models, it's not something that already defined. Like you cannot implement the same traditional reinforcement learning from human feedback for RAG. Like there is no reinforcement mm-hmm. learning, or for prompt engineering, or from agents. So the question was how we can redefine this for these applications and how we can solve this problem. We call it more optimization through human feedback, turning users as evaluators and judges, and then be able to optimize large language models, large language model based applications. Yeah, like chatbots, conversational AI, agents, like anything there.
Can you paint the picture of the workflow for us from start to end?
The workflow of
how someone uses the product.
Our product. Oh yeah. So our solution, it's a platform, easy to use through SDK or API. Anyone can sign up, connect the platform to their
application,
like implementation. Usually in this LLM RAG applications, it's all about like having VectorDB, then context, then prompt, and then interface. So we just plug in there, and then we analyze the whole like end user experience, queries, responses, and then with that query analysis gives like implicit feedback. The platform, our platform has this engine after connector layer. It's called insights layer, where insights layer is able to analyze the query response, the chat history, to understand, okay, what is the intention of this user? Why financial analyst? What a financial analyst is looking for, and he gets that or not. And then after that analysis, if there is an explicit feedback, the insight engine will take that into account as well. It's an explicit, hey, I'm not happy with the output. I'm not satisfied with
that. So that's provided by the user.
By the user, yeah. But 10% cases are with explicit feedback. There is usually people do not like provide feedback. They just query. They either get the answer or not, and they leave the chat. That's mm-hmm. all. So the question is how we can analyze this implicit part, derive signals, and use it for root cause analysis. That's the green space here. How we can use this information and go back and say, okay, they are not getting the answer because there is a knowledge hole against context, or maybe vector DP, or maybe there is this chunk size is not good, or prompt is not good, etc. A lot of like this, these are just layers. You can go deeper and deeper. And then after that, the question is how we can optimize, knowing that user wants to get MRR and he's not getting, there is a knowledge hole. We need to add more information there.
So on the implicit feedback, I think you called it, on the implicit feedback side, when there's an interaction between the user and the LLM, as you mentioned, there's several things that could go wrong. The prompt could be poorly, the LLM might not have the correct context to answer the question, and it might answer it incorrectly. So at that level, you guys are making a determination of as to how good of a response that was, I guess?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
So it's like some sort of percentage-based,
confidence-based, and also we use some NLP to analyze those like queries response. Similarity checking, yeah.
Can you give more details on what exactly it is you guys are checking for? So like one thing you mentioned is in RAG applications, for those people who don't know, RAG extends the ability of an LLM to refer to data that is not in its training mm-hmm. set. So things that it doesn't know about beforehand.
Yeah.
So if I ask it a question that is specific to my company, for example, it can go search through my company's knowledge base and refer to it. But maybe that the answer to that question isn't in the knowledge base. So for example, you guys would
this information is missing. That's why there's no way to retrieve that information if it doesn't. Or maybe that information exists, but chunk size is not good to mm-hmm. be able to catch.
So chunk size is another parameter.
Or other hyperparameters. There are tons of hyperparameters. So yeah, we do that as well. And just to mention this part as well, why we took this direction. So while interviewing these old people, like practitioners who are working on building some LLM applications for production. So eventually, this is not a research that was for them, it's not a research project. It's project, let's put it in production. Mm-hmm. The thing that we saw, okay, there are a lot of eval tools, right, in the market right now. Like last batch, YC's last batch, 190 eval tools, a lot.
190 LLM evaluation tools?
Eval tools, yeah. So, and the question was, okay, why do we have these so many eval tools? They do basically same thing. But LLM applications are not making to production, even mm-hmm. though there are a lot of eval tools evaluated. Oh, perfect. They're like, I can bring this analogy, like for computer vision, you test out the model performance on some test set. It's like 99% accuracy for face detection. But once it goes to production, it's not working. Obviously. And same is happening here. But yeah, why we have these all eval tools when we are not making to production? So that's why we were like, okay, maybe we need to take the backwards approach. Let's put the user into the center of development and optimization. Let's check what they want to achieve and then come back and optimize and evaluate, do all of the things. But you have to know what they want, because mm-hmm. like it's very in real world, in production could happen anything. It's mm-hmm. very probability based, right? You cannot like test out all those cases in this like with evaluation tools. But what you can do, you can, if you know what is their intention, what they want to achieve, you can go back and add it to the application. That was kind of the intensive in terms of optimization, making these solutions reliable, aligned with end user expectations, ethics, values, etc.
How do you make a determination of what the user wanted to get?
That's being done based on that query analysis. So with this query analysis, with that interaction, let's call it that way, we kind of derive signals, what they want, what are those keywords, what they want to achieve, what they are looking for. And then based on that, we go back and say, oh, maybe in your RAG application, you have to enhance your tested, like they, of course, test out their drug after mm-hmm. development, meaning having some query responses like 1000 or whatever. Maybe that's not enough because users are looking for something else out of your consideration and you need to have more test cases. But in order to do that, you cannot just sit down as an engineer and think, oh, maybe this test case. No, what you can do, you can basically know what they are looking for. And based on those keywords and everything, you can come back and say, okay, we need to add this mm-hmm. two more test cases.
So you guys have your own model that does things like intent analysis and things of that nature?
I wouldn't say our own model. I mean, we use LLM as a judge approach orchestration also.
So you guys use existing models?
Existing models, yeah. A very known approach, but also we do some NLP. That's why it helps us to have better results. If you use only LLM as a judge approach, there are a lot of eval tools that provide that. If you, for example, if you ask ChatGPT whether this answer is faithful or not, if you ask that twice, it will give you different answers.
Right.
Yeah, so how you can rely on this? Right. Like, that's not reliable, right? So here, it's not enough. Like, you have to introduce some machine learning, some more deterministic.
Right.
Yeah.
What about, you said you guys also help optimize parameters. Does that include the traditional LLM parameters like temperature, top P, things of that nature?
Yeah, yeah, those as well. Those are under research, to be
it's more,
honest.
It's more iffy if the works
or not. Yeah. We have some results, for chunk size and everything, but we will get better results when we see that it's feasible,
Interesting. Do you think all of this can be done at the implicit feedback layer, or would the ideal solution be if users were more willing to give explicit feedback?
Yeah, that's a very good one. So giving explicit feedback, that's the other part of our solution, how we can reinforce users to give explicit feedback.
To like encourage them.
Encourage them, right? So there are ways of like thumbs up, thumbs down, input field, they can rating. But the challenge is maybe we need to have a pop-up randomly analyze this like 5 queries, see that this user has to send some explicit feedback and then ask him like give feedback to be able to provide better response. So this is something that we are working on as well.
You mentioned agents. So in agentic workflows, there are more components than a traditional like back and forth chatbot or RAG application.
Yeah.
Are there things that you do specifically for improving agents that are different than other workflows?
I wouldn't say no. Like literally yesterday, we started to work on that and we just published an example how it works. So we treat that agent. So basically what that agent is like a couple of tasks. There is one big task and then subtasks. Each subtask is either a RAG or something, right? So we treat them as a like sequence of
calls.
Yeah, RAG, prompt engineer or whatever. And then we treat them as one, like for in our like context, it's a project.
Mm-hmm.
We treat them like sequence of projects and then we link them the results. Mm-hmm. So transition was pretty like smooth. We will see the results, like what we have done so far is good. We have 2 customers right now with agents. And
have you guys already observed what kind of improvement that you're integrating your system into workflows brings to LLM applications?
The obvious one is like improving efficiency. Before, as when we were interviewing these people, they were like, there should be some translation layer between these people, like they don't have any knowledge about this interface between them, what they want to achieve. And they also, they are domain experts, like these chatbots are being used in finance, legal, like, or other healthcare, other applications. And their main concern was from engineering point of view, there should be some translation layer. So layer that will fetch this all like implicit, explicit feedback, consolidate into one place, analyze it and give us some sense of, okay, maybe this X, Y, Z, and we have all this mapping. That was the, so before us, with these current POCs that we have, they were spending a lot of time in terms of going back and forth, reproducing the results, asking for more details, what they want, etc. And then another thing, in between, there is this product manager, these people, right? These people interact more with these customers and they need this, like, understand what's happening, come back and translate this to engineers, and having all these great evaluation tools are not enough. Like, no product manager uses these eval tools. Like, eval tools are more like dev tools. Mm-hmm. So with this solution, we are more like collaborative studio platform that translates, and the one of the like improvements is like improve the efficiency of teams to resolve issues like time to market, time to resolution.
So in addition to an SDK, you guys have like a
platform,
non-technical people easily use.
SDK is just for like to connect these like their infrastructure to the platform, mm-hmm. so processes will be easy. That's all.
Right. So you mentioned that this was a pivot. You guys were in computer vision at first. I imagine it's difficult to spend like 18 months, 2 years on one subset and then tell yourself that, okay, like you said earlier, like at the end of the day, this is a business and you have to make sure that the product you're building, there's demand for it in the market. Mm-hmm. How do you make the decision of mm-hmm. it's time to set this aside and we're not starting from zero because now we're very much more educated than mm-hmm. we were when we first started, but we're starting from a lower point and trying to build something up that can go mm-hmm. even higher. I imagine that's tough.
Yes, that was very hard. Yeah. First it was a question, personal question, like, hey, you had this vision for this. You were trying to convince everyone that this is huge. Now you're going to say, oh, you know, again, computer vision was awesome. It's huge, et cetera, et cetera. But because of XYZ, mm-hmm. we have to look into other things. And now you have to reapply the vision, the problem, like that conviction. You have to show that now this is the one that we need to go after. Yeah. And this is about like investors. Like these old investors, they knew me.
The computer vision girl.
Yeah, that one. And now, okay, no, we are not doing that anymore. And you have to convince that you as a founder, you have that conviction, then you can solve this. Mm-hmm. You know that like thing no one knows. And yeah, that was very hard. Like still it's hard. There are things that working for startup, doing a startup, it's working in very uncertain environment, but still there are a lot of unknowns coming up. And then right after pivot, we were trying to raise, like to speed up development and everything. We wanted to understand, with raise also, we wanted to understand what people think about this idea and everything. Like, is this a new category, new market? Because these people see a lot of founders, a lot of ideas, right? And at that time, it was like March, April. We had only wireframes and a couple of slides, like in this market. And then you're going and trying to sell this vision and everything. Yeah.
But do you think, given that now it seems like the best models in their domains are increasingly becoming not unimodal models but multimodal models that handle both image and text and in some cases audio, do you think at some point you guys will sort of converge the two visions and have one evaluation tool that does both image, computer vision and NLP?
I mean, yes, definitely. Like with market, like how the market goes, we will see. But I do see that computer vision is going to be there soon. Mm-hmm. Right now, companies, businesses, they all want to introduce these large language models. Just they want, like everyone. They say, oh, let's just do some POC to see what kind of value it brings. That's the thing. That's why they all are thinking around that. But still, there are verticals, like industry verticals, where computer vision is much needed, like detection, classification in different, like agriculture to healthcare to surveillance or space tech, these all things. Maybe it's like it will be there soon.
This is a question I've asked like most AI founders that come on these days, but in your case, it's particularly interesting. So there's this constant concern that the next model is going to come out and it's going to be so good that it's going to either render what the startup does to be no longer useful or... well, that's the primary one, I guess. In your case, though, what you guys do, the model will never replace. But in theory, there's the risk that the models become so good that evaluation becomes less and less of an immediate priority. Although I imagine for big businesses, it's always going to be a priority. But how do you think about that? Like, presumably by the end of the year, we'll see another great like leap model, forward in models,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So how do you think about feedback intelligence's position there?
In my opinion, it's going to be a lot of models, better and better every time, sure. Those models are going to be general models. Those are not domain specific. Those models cannot contain data about very specific business, about very specific tasks. This model will be helpful in terms of optimization towards some tasks, specific tasks. But I don't think that these models in the like next, I don't know, in a very near future will be very like super model, like this idea of having this super intelligence, they mm-hmm. call it that way. I don't think it will cover every use case, and mm-hmm. having only one model will solve, like, this isn't kind of AGI problem, right? I don't think
AGI is not coming yet.
We'll there, like, for sure, like,
one day,
not right now. Like, for example, ChatGPT 4 is really good, but you cannot use it for just,
it can't replace us yet, so is the idea then that RAG systems and these more like workflow style applications will always need evaluation because they rely on components outside of just the LLM's itself's performance?
Yeah. Yeah, and
that's also betting that I guess RAG improvements will be slower than model improvements.
RAG improvements will be
like improvements to RAG technology.
Yeah,
RAG models will accelerate faster. It was slower than traditional model, the general model performance.
Yeah, because these RAG models are very domain specific, and introducing all edge cases to domain specific RAG applications, like you need to cover everything, right, in that domain. But how much you can cover, how many cases you can think of and then introduce, you need like just have a control. In my opinion, the problem here is having control, having a streamlined way of doing that optimization, whether it's a RAG or agents. Right now everyone is
doing agent.
Yeah, they think that it's better than RAG, which is fair, like it's more complex. But with that complexity, it's better, but also the probability being faulty is
higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be really interesting if an agentic workflow is comprised of several components, mm-hmm. like tool use, where like the agent can go and call these specific functions that you've given it access to beforehand. It has planning, it has memory, it has
observation,
reflection. It'd be interesting if there was observability tools around, like, did it pick the right tool?
That's
you give it a prompt of where it needs to go use this tool, and a tool can be, for those who don't know, like calculate some very specific thing, right? Yeah. An LLM can't do that on its own without a tool. Or in the planning phase, so like an agent can first makes a plan on how to do some task, and the better that plan is, the better the performance would be. So like if there was an observability thing that like scored the plan and then suggested ways to make it better and stuff.
Yeah.
On agentic workflows, there's super interesting areas that you can go down with observability.
Yeah, it's very interesting. That is dimension one, like whether it picked up the right tool or not. That's one of the questions that the current customer that we have, they wanted to know whether, for example, this is a very interesting example, querying what's the MRR and what is the monthly revenue is the same question. Now, it will pick up the same tool or not.
Yeah.
And that's right or not. That's something that, that's, you know, workflow.
Those are things that you guys
We flag those cases where it says like, what are similar, like same queries, and whether the reply is the same or not.
And whether the agent picked the right tool to use or not.
We do this from whether the response is correct or not. And with response, if the response is the same, it means that there are the same tools, or then there are cases when it's not the same tool, but then you go down and say, okay, what's the difference or what's the similarity?
That's really interesting.
It is, but it's very, very complex. If we split this into like maybe three, it goes down always, like different paths, routes that you're going deeper and deeper, and there is like maybe this, maybe that.
And does it become harder and harder as you go down those routes to evaluate whether or not the tool that was picked was right?
Observability, evaluation, and optimization also giving. Eventually, our job is not only say, oh, there is a drift, but for us, like in the context of our platform, we want to say there is this issue after analysis. The issue is because of this. The root cause of that is this, and this is potential resolution of that. So if you go down deeper and deeper, you see that, or maybe there is no one resolution here. There are multiple, several, right?
That's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done on the reflection side from an observability perspective? Reflection, for those who don't know, is there are papers that have shown that a model's performance improves when, after providing an initial output, it's then prompted again to look at the output that it provided and see if it can improve it. So I'm thinking, like, is there... Like, because the model could, in theory, make a mistake on the second reflection, right? Or the third reflection stuff. I think, like, typically, the one paper I'm thinking of called Self-Reflect showed that once the model reflects on its output five times, the model performance improves by, on average, 20% on certain tasks, not everything. I wonder if, like, if there's an evaluation done at every layer, at every reflection point, then it ensures that the reflection procedure works better. But then you're also getting a ton of LLM calls into the workflow and makes the whole thing slower.
Latency. I mean, yeah, that's a very interesting problem. I mean, in this LLM space, what I have seen in the past, I mean, 6 months or seven months, there are a lot of really good research topics. A lot, like just sit down and
you pick whatever you want.
Yeah, every feature is a research topic. I mean, for us at least, what we are doing, it's very research heavy, experiments and everything. Without that, you can be just a very simple, like, platform visual.
It's a really interesting point, because I remember about like almost two years ago when ChatGPT came out. ChatGPT was such an expensive and complex system to build that, and it was a fully, like, it's a full research project, right? That, like, everybody said the universities are dead, like academic research and universities are dead and stuff, but agentic research and LLM performance improvement, or even just understanding what LLMs can do better.
Explainability, LLM
interpretability, explainability.
Those are huge questions.
And they're not like multi-billion dollar projects like training a large model.
No. Those are very research heavy, experiment heavy, but not in terms of fine tuning or training. So the research that we are doing in terms of user query analysis, just that part, that's a small part of this whole platform. That's a research that is being done also at Berkeley, Bear, the laboratory.
Yeah.
And now, and there are two PhD students, and one of them is Armenian, by the way. And we are like trying to find some collaboration rooms, because they do some research, which we do as well. So maybe we can just share. The thing is that we cannot publish everything. We can have some publications, but we cannot reveal every like
detail
and everything. But yeah, the everything what we do right now, at least, I'm in touch with academia a lot. They do as well, like Berkeley or Stanford. This, at least my connections are there mainly. But yeah, these people try to solve as well.
It's interesting that in Armenia, I mean, there isn't much machine learning research being done. And there's some, but not a ton of research being done in the university levels to begin with. Actually, I guess that's not fully fair, because Yerevan N's work is in close collaboration with the Yerevan State University. And then the Russian-Armenian University has a lot of output these days as well.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is focused around
ML
training.
The
experimentation involves training. Whereas these agentic workflows are much less resource intensive and can be coming from like most computer science departments. So it's just an interesting observation.
Maybe we need to talk to Harant.
We should talk to Harant, you mentioned Berkeley. Another thing that you did since the last time you were on the show was you participated in the Berkeley Skydeck program.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
It was really good, Being an international founder from Armenia, having no access to Silicon Valley, Berkeley gave a lot of connections. connections to the university labs, and also just having that Berkeley SkyTech, or we went through Berkeley SkyTech or SkyTech Fund invested in us, was very helpful.
It's a good validator.
Validation and having their name attached to us. Still, like with this pivot and everything, they were helpful. It's not just doing the program and it's done. No, we are always in touch. You are, you have always that access to the university and their connections.
What's an advice you'd give to 2021 Chinar, who was just starting to think about building a startup?
This is the right decision to do this. What else I would say?
What's the biggest mistake you made throughout the whole process?
I mean, I wouldn't say mistake, but I would say more, I was learning. As I mentioned, in my head, this was all about solving the great, like the best problem and everything. And no, this is all about
just that's a business first.
Business. This is all about capital. And I would advise myself, like, hey, don't think about that. Be very flexible about people, about everyone and everything. That's all, I think.
Where do you hope feedback intelligence to be in 5 years?
This is a hard problem that we are solving. I want us to solve this problem and solve this problem in the context within customers, like needs. problem evolution and customer needs. Yeah, I want to see that, not just solve that problem. Mm-hmm. You know, this problem is going to be changed for sure. Initially, it was prompt engineering, then RAG, then agents. Maybe in a month, we will have something else.
Yeah. I hope you'll come back on and tell us what that next thing is. Thank you so much.
For sure. Thank you so much.